Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Small crowd today, but you know, when I guess two or three are gathered, you know, things happen. So let's bow for a word of prayer. Father, thank you so much for the amazing things that you're doing. Thank you for tonight, Shavuot. Thank you for now, celebrating your Shabbat. Thank you for the beautiful things that you just lay on our path. I pray that, you know, you would just, this would be your message, Father, that you would just work through me and that you would just open our ears and open our hearts to understand your Torah. And that you would bind our hearts to your commandments and help us to serve you in truth. We thank you so much for the opportunity to do this. We pray all this b'shem Yeshua. Amen. All right, so I have a question for you guys. I'm going to start off with this. How many of you have low expectations on something? Like, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be, like, really, really bad. But then you experience it, and then it's like, whoa, that was way better than I thought it was. How many of you? Show of hands. We're a small crowd, you know, we can all show it, yeah. I'm definitely guilty of it. One of the most recent examples, after our healing prayer conference here at Ruach Israel, you know, we had a day off because all of us were really tired and we were just running around here like crazy, and Rabbi Nathan was so gracious to like let us have a day off here. So I'm like, yes, I'm going to take this day off. I'm going to take it for myself. Going to be a nice day to just, you know, go around town and just catch up with all my thoughts about what just happened over the past couple of hours. But on the flip side, one of my housemates, actually said, hey, how about we go see the Avengers Infinity War movie? You want to do that? And I'm like, okay, here's what's going on in my head right now. $15 to get into the movie theater, $10 for popcorn, $5 for something else that you probably don't know that they're charging for you for, but they're charging you. They're out there to get you. I don't know, just like to see a 2 or 3 hour movie, like, I don't know. Movies are great. I love movies, don't get me wrong. But seeing it on the big screen, like maybe once or twice a year, it's just really special to me and not going like all the time. Yes, I could have said no, but I went along for the ride. We had another friend from out of town anyways, and he was staying with us. And it was a really fun time. First of all, the movie ticket was only $12, not $15 like I originally called. Second of all, we didn't get popcorn. And third of all, there were no additional charges, so that was really good. But this movie, the Infinity Wars, the Avengers, I mean, I'm not one from action movies. It was incredible. It's like there was so much good action, and there's so much, no spoiler alerts allowed. If you haven't seen it, then go see it. If you have seen it, come talk to me after Oneg and what have you, and we'll geek out on the Avengers. But it was absolutely well done, and I'm so glad that I've seen this movie. I talk about expectations because that's kind of like the way that we perceive our Bible. You know, sometimes it's very dry, it seems like, on the outset, and you're like, oh, why am I reading this? But there's so much richness. Today, we're starting a new book in the Torah, and it's called, drumroll please, drumroll. Numbers. Now, doesn't that really excite you? Numbers. Numbers. To me, it sounds like a living snooze fest, honestly. There's like, you know, the name Numbers, it's like you have to be smart to actually understand and read this book. You have to be in science or math or something like that. And that's just not me. And as a kid, I was thinking, who wants to read this? You look through the first couple of chapters and you're like, okay. Genealogy is great. You know, counting the people, great. Census, yeah, nice. Move on. You know, let's get to Deuteronomy, the speeches and all that, which might not be exciting to some people, but it might excite others. But I feel like our English Bibles just really drain the excitement out of Numbers and take the, you know, our anticipation level of something that could be boring into something that's really, really huge. So the Hebrew name for this book is actually called Bamidbar. Ba means in, Midbar, wilderness. Literally in a desert, in a wilderness, in a transitional stage from the whole story of bondage to freedom. Now, let me recap a little bit because I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So the Israelites were actually in slavery under the Egyptians for 400 years. They were oppressed. They were just always being tormented by people who were just more and stronger than them, and everything was just going really wrong. So God actually looked down and saw the oppression of his people. And he said, we need to get them out of here. What he did was he appointed Moses, and he said to Moses, listen, you know, Israel's my firstborn son. They went through the Red Sea together, and that was kind of an immersion from this land of slavery into this land of promises. And the whole people were immersed into a new life, into like some sort of newness, that they would come out changed on the other side. Now, it didn't exactly work like that. They received the Torah at Mount Sinai, and there's a lot of things that we could talk about. We can talk about the golden calf. We can talk about, you know, all the different just successes and accomplishments, but utter failures of the people and breaking faith with God and so on and so forth. There's just so much that we could talk about there. But now we see at the beginning of the book of Numbers, they are crowded around Mount Sinai, this people. There's about over 600,000 of them. We only count like 600,000 men who are fighting age who can go to the army, but we don't factor in the women, the children, those who are like older, and you know, people who are not eligible for the army. So it's a lot of people. And you see a lot of people who are just crowded without an identity at this mountain. But God says, let's take a census, let's gather them together by tribe, and he does what he does best. He creates order out of disorder. From chaos, he brings a beautiful picture. If you think about it, the book of Numbers, like, you know, Numbers, the most dull book ever, is kind of like the book of Genesis, because he's taking six things, like 6 days of creation, 6 times 2, 12 tribes, and bringing them from just chaos into something really beautiful. The people just, for example, built the tabernacle, and they were thinking, what is this? God's glory exists in here, but what are we actually going to do with this? Now, they received the instruction on how to get the tabernacle from point A to point B, how to pick it up, how to assemble it, how to just do a lot of things. So things look really beautiful. You see this order, you see this formation, Judah's leading, and then the sons of Levi are like, you know, assembling the tabernacle, and things are just in a really, really functional way that God just has for the people. But there's a problem. Between point A, Mount Sinai, and point B, the Promised Land, is a barrier, and that is Bamidbar, the desert, in the desert, in the wilderness. There is something before the children of Israel that lays in their way to actually attain all the freedom and all the promises that God had for them, that he swore to them in this beautiful land. Ordinarily, this journey would take 10 days from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land, just a week and a half. It takes them 40 years. So we wonder, what happened? Like, what went wrong? You know, this 10-day pilgrimage, now it takes like 40 years. What is going on? I'm not going to spoil the Avengers for you, but I am going to spoil the book of Bamidbar for you. It's just, there's some great stuff that happens from the people, don't get me wrong, and no other people, you know, could do a good job. Like, for example, Israel failed, but the Dutch wouldn't do any better, or any other people group wouldn't do any better. Because it's just like they didn't see the promises. They were being tested. They didn't see that God was working behind the scenes. And they were sent into this wilderness for God to test them and to say, okay, here's where your faith, where the rubber meets the road for your faith. Here's what we need to do, and here's how we need to make it happen in order to go to the Promised Land. Initially, it was like manna is something that they received every day, and a double portion for the seventh day, for the Shabbat. And you see a lot of great things like that. You see Gentile kings later on in the book, you know, blessing Israel, even when they're in such disarray. You see all these things behind, but the people, like, fixate on their former lifestyle because they said, oh, Egypt, well, it wasn't really that bad in there, even though we were oppressed. But guess what? We knew where our next meal was coming from. We remember the leeks, the onions, the garlic, the fish, the melon, the everything, the luxury that we had in Egypt. But that's such a selective memory because the people were just building things for Pharaoh and were under great oppression. So what they did was they took their past and they let that affect their future. If only we were in Egypt now. And I called this message the theology of the wilderness because God just goes with it and works with these people and doesn't leave them or forsake them. He just continues on. And you see this faithfulness that God has between him and Israel and just manifest throughout the whole book. But at the same time, things get really out of hand. So much so, at one point, the people say, Moses, he doesn't know what he's doing. Aaron, he doesn't know what he's doing. This whole leadership doesn't know exactly what they're doing. That leadership includes God himself. So what they say is, listen, we're going to appoint our own leader and we're going to go back to Egypt. We're going to make our way back. We're not going to go to the way of like where God wants us because this is not where he wants us. And it's like everything got like the best of them, unfortunately. They were not in the right place and they were not in the right mindset for what God had for them. Now, this is all a very interesting story. You might be thinking that this is a very interesting story, but you might be also thinking, Joe, how does this apply to 21st century Boston? Because we don't have deserts. We don't have, you know, these roadblocks. We can get anywhere at any time that we want to. We can have instant this and blah, blah, blah. There's just so much that we can, like, access from our phones, from all of our devices. Everything just lays it out for us. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but, you know, it's so far removed from the way these people lived. Well, I think that there's so much of a deeper lesson that we can learn from Bamidbar, which is the following. It's the fact that our culture has taken things that are good and now deemed them not so good, and then they've taken the not so good and deemed that good, and there's a reversal of morals that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And there's also lots of other things that God just continues to test us with. He sends us into the wilderness. He sends us in Bamidbar, like into the desert to actually, you know, endure these tests. You might have lost, you know, your job. You might have lost someone dear to you. You might have lost a friend. You might have just crazy relationships with people. You might have a lot of things that you're going with. And God just uses those things for his good and for his glory, because he wants to see how, if we cling to him and if we trust in him, because clinging and trusting to him is how we will survive these tests of the wilderness. That's something that the people weren't willing to see. They weren't willing to grab onto him and even go the way that he had them. I can firmly say that I've had desert seasons. For example, just picture me, I'm just thinking like back a year ago, I was in New York, also known as the second Holy Land, Brooklyn. It was the other Holy Land where you had just a vibrant thing everywhere. You had like Jews all over the place. I went to all these different synagogues celebrating different holidays, and I would take people around, and New York was a popular destination spot, so all these friends would just come through, and I'm like, oh, hey, let's go around Manhattan. Let's have fun. You know, let's have a good time. I finished up all my seminary studies, and all of that was really, really good until the day I graduated. And the day that I finished everything, I'm like, whoa, I'm not going to be in New York anymore. I'm sort of moving out right now. Okay, God, what is now on the radar? And it was a tough season because all these people wanted me to like come to be part of their congregations and communities. And there were just like a lot of broken promises and a lot of things that just didn't work out, and many logistical kinds of things, and people weren't like exactly up front. And, you know, there was just a lot of pieces of the puzzle that were just missing. And I felt like that was a desert season for me because there I was in New York living it up and having fun and doing all these great things. But then all of a sudden it's just like, whoa, where am I, God? And so just through that season, through prayer, through devoting myself to him and his word and his Torah and everything, devoting myself to Yeshua, it was a time when I was just, you know, really just trying to sense where he wanted me. But then, you know, he actually, and along with like some other people as well, just said, go check, you know, the Berklee gig board, because, you know, I was a student there and, you know, who knows what opportunities I might have through that. I'm thinking, okay, God, I sort of applied to every single gig that I could get at Berklee and I didn't get it. What makes you think now I'm actually going to get like a permanent job kind of thing that I want to like have up here or wherever? He's like, just go through it. Just stop it. And I'm like, okay. And so I looked through things. I applied to this music teaching job right here in Boston. And lo and behold, there was also an opening at the City Ruach place, the Ruach House. And, you know, it was just like a match made in heaven. God sent me up here, which was really, really cool. I was not expecting that. Boston was on my radar, but I'm like, whoa, this is really awesome. So it's just, you know, me just being up here is a test of God's faithfulness. It's like, you know, it's a testimony to him just showing that he's so good in that. And another thing too, we need to devote ourselves to him during these times of testing. Also, we need to devote ourselves to community. I remember when I was a student at Berklee, and it was great because I was coming to Shabbat services here and having fun and being involved with the community. But the problem was, that's 2 hours out of the week. You've got a lot more hours that you need to deal with. I feel like, you know, coming to Shabbat service is great, but we also need to be communities that last, who we can bear one another's burden together, who we can just talk to, and we can be surrounded by good people. I feel like Shabbat is a great springboard, but there's so much more that we can be doing and pouring into one another's life. I feel like with that and understanding all the different problems that we have and all the different things, hearing about praise reports and all the good things that we're all going through, that can significantly help us in this wandering that we have in our desert today where so much has gone wrong. I think those things, just relying on God, clinging to him, and also relying on one another and community and building something that is so foundational is really beautiful. But I also want to like have the third tip of the theology of the wilderness is all about someone who embodied what Israel went through. So think about it. You know, Israel was called God's beloved son. And then you see another who is called God's beloved son who he is well pleased in. Then you also see Israel being immersed in the Red Sea as a sign of new life. You also see this one who is immersed in the River Jordan by Yochanan, by John. And you see something really beautiful like going on between both of those stories. And then immediately Israel is sent into the wilderness to get to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. And then this one is sent into the wilderness by the Ruach himself, by the Spirit, and he is being tested for 40 days. And this one that I speak about, I think most of you would know, is Yeshua. He embodies what Israel did, and he overcame it. He's the one that just went from point A to point B without any hiccups. He could have turned back. He could have not obeyed what his father had in the plan for him, but he went through it. And he's the one who actually took this lesson of wanderings, of journeys, and, you know, all the dryness that we, like, currently have. He took it upon himself. So, again, it's just the matter of trusting him and knowing where he wants us to be and trusting the plan that he has, because this one man, Israel, makes all the difference in the world. So next time that we think, oh, we're in a dry season, you know, God has like turned his face, it's okay to question God, where are you? It's okay to do those things. But we also want to keep in mind that as he sent his people out in the book of Bamidbar to the wilderness, the book of Numbers, he like sent them to endure testing and to see where the rubber hits the road. He also does that to us today. And I think that through prayer, through community, and through leaning on Yeshua, everything is going to be okay. Shabbat Shalom.
Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah. For Messiah.